So we're continuing from text 17, chapter 7. Tesham gyani nitya yukta eka bhaktit vashishyate priyohi gyanino tyartam aham sa chamama priya. Of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him, and he is very dear to me. So, chaturveda bhajandimam jana sukrittanarjana artajagasa artadi gyanicha padadarshabha. So, of the four pious that surrender to Krishna, the Sukritis, among them the jnani stands out. Now, as Prabhupada is mentioning in the previous purport, one should practice pure devotional service. You should just be trying to serve Krishna selflessly. You don't want anything from Krishna. So the jnani is nearest to that. He's still selfish in the sense that he desires, you know, he is knowledgeable of Brahman, and he in a sense is attached to the impersonal realization. He's not motivated by pure unalloyed love to Krishna. Nevertheless, he has no material attachments. There's no material desires. He has no material motivations. He's more or less free of material encumbrances. And therefore, when he finally accepts Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to Krishna, then immediately he is a pure devotee. Immediately he becomes an unalloyed devotee of Krishna. He's able to step into pure devotional service, right? Because he's already selfless. So Krishna here is glorifying that jnani in the next few verses. Prabhupada says here, free from all material contaminations of material desires, the distressed, the inquisitive, and the penniless, and the seeker after supreme knowledge can all become pure devotees. But out of them, he who is in knowledge of the absolute truth and free from all material desires becomes a really pure devotee of the Lord. And of the four orders and devotees who is in the devotee who is in full knowledge and at the same time engaged in devotional service, the Lord says is the best. Okay. Let's see. Prabhupada, jumping ahead a sentence or two, it says, so by association with pure devotees, the inquisitive, the distressed, and the seeker after material amelioration, and the man in knowledge all become themselves pure. So amelioration meaning reciprocation, or, you know, you want some money or material facility in exchange for your worship, right? But in the preparatory stage, the man who is in full knowledge of the Supreme Lord and is at the same time executing devotional service is very dear to the Lord. He who is situated in pure knowledge of the transcendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so protected in devotional service that material contamination cannot touch him. All right, so let's take a look at text 18. Udara sarva evaiti gyane tatma eva meyamitam astita sa hi yuktatma mam eva anuttamam gatim. All these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls, but he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self. Being engaged in transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect goal. So it is not that devotees who are less complete in knowledge are not dear to the Lord. The Lord says that they are all magnanimous because anyone who comes to the Lord for any purpose is called a Mahatma or great soul. The devotees who want some benefit out of devotional service are accepted by the Lord because there is an exchange of affection. Out of affection, they ask the Lord for some material benefit, and when they get it, they become so satisfied that they also advance in devotional service. So, udara, they're all considered magnanimous. What does this refer to? Well, it means they have affection for Krishna. At least that's how Krishna accepts it, right? I mean, that's the reality. But Krishna is so kind that he understands that the reason they approach him is not just simply they have some faith in God or belief in God. You know, ultimately there's an affection there. There's an attraction. Yeah? And so that's therefore they're considered magnanimous. It's like this verse is really Krishna saying on a personal level that he appreciates the people that come to him, even for selfish things. Because the reason they're coming to him is ultimately a kind of love. It's a kind of affection. All right? But here Prabhupada continues, the devotee in full knowledge is considered to be very dear to the Lord because his only purpose is to serve the Supreme Lord with love and devotion. Such a devotee cannot live a second without contacting or serving the Supreme Lord. So, astita hi sa hi yuktatma mam evanuttamam gatim. So he is sure to attain Krishna, right? And he, who is the highest and most perfect goal, the anuttamam, the uttamam gatim, is the highest destination, the highest attainment. And Krishna is saying, jnani tvatmaiva meyamatam, I consider him to be just like my own self. Yeah? Krishna is saying, like, you know, they are my atma, right? These jnanis. Because, you know, once they come to devotional service, they're serving Krishna out of unalloyed love. So that's how Krishna feels about his pure devotees. All right, so, and Krishna really presents this very beautifully here, this verse Prabhupada's quoting from the Bhagavatam, 9.468. The Lord says, Sadavo hridayam mahyam, sadunam hridayam tvaham, mad anyate na jananti naham te bhyo managapi. The devotees are always in my heart, and I am always in the hearts of the devotees. The devotee does not know anything beyond me, and I also cannot forget the devotee. There is a very intimate relationship between me and the pure devotees. Pure devotees in full knowledge are never out of spiritual touch, and therefore they are very much dear to me. So there's a very close relationship. You know, what comes to mind is that picture of Hanumanji, right? You know, the famous one where Ram is hugging Hanuman. So there's this sort of unity, and this is true unity when it says that the unalloyed devotee or the highest yogi merges with Krishna. This is really what it means. It means you're merging in love, you're merging in, because you're unified together, just like a husband and wife, you know, at the marriage ceremony, they're supposed to become one, right? They're supposed to be emerging together in love. So the devotee and Krishna become one. Jnani tvatmaiva meyamatam. Krishna considers them to be one with him, right? And sadava hridayam mahyam, sadunam hridayam tvaham, right? The sadhus are always in Krishna's heart, and Krishna, and, you know, I'm always in their heart. They're always thinking of Krishna, and Krishna's always thinking of them. So that's how you become spiritually advanced. If you're always thinking of Krishna, Krishna will pay a lot of attention to you. Right? He'll be drawn to you, he'll be attracted to you. You become, you know, very interesting to him. But if you're not, if you don't think of Krishna, and you're just kind of ignoring Krishna and forgetting Krishna, which is the natural condition of the material world, right? That's the default position. You know, you get up in the morning or whatever, you know, the default position is forgetting Krishna. But if somehow or other, by developing attraction to Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna and the spiritual master, you can cultivate an attraction to the extent that you're always thinking of him, then his mercy will flow down upon you. His attention will be upon you. And he'll consider you just, you know, one with himself. So intimate is the love in exchange. Mat anyat te na janati naham te bhyo managapi. So there's nothing else other than Krishna for the devotee, right? They don't know anything other than me. That's what Krishna's saying. Nor do I know anything other than them. You know, that's all Krishna thinks about. You want to know what Krishna thinks about all day? Like sometimes you have, remember this movie, Baron von Munchausen? The Adventures of Baron von Munchausen? No? Too old. I'm too old. So, you know, there's a, Robin Williams is in that movie and he plays some kind of, it's like a farcical comedy in the mood of older theater. And it's really, it's from the same people that do Monty Python and all that. Anyway, Robin Williams plays this kind of like moon god or something, and he's like a normal looking guy, except he's got a big disc around his neck. And what happens is his head becomes unscrewed and it flies off into space, you know, and the head hates being attached to the body, and the body's like very lusty. It's always running after the queen and trying to, you know, have sexual enjoyment, But the head wants to contemplate, you know, cosmic things, right? As soon as the head becomes detached, it starts, you know, making all these noises and, like, you know, it's calculating whatever, you know, different movements of stars and planets and stuff like that. So there's this idea, you know, this is a kind of, it's of course a joke, but there's this idea that somehow God must be this intellect which is absorbed like a watchmaker, you know, absorbed in the technicalities of the movements of time and space, right? That God is somehow thinking he has to really push himself hard, you know, otherwise he can't maintain the universe. Or you have Atlas, right, is holding up the earth. If he somehow or other, you know, gets an itch on his rib cage, right? You come up and tickle him or something, then the whole world will fall, right? So that's not really true. What is God thinking about? What is God absorbed in? He's absorbed in his devotees. It's basically what he's thinking about right now. Want to know what Krishna's thinking about right now? He's thinking about his devotees. Yeah, he's thinking about, you know, either Srimati Radharani or the gopis or the cowherd boys or Mother Yashoda. He's totally absorbed in them. And why? At this very moment in eternal time, Krishna's thinking about one of his devotees, no doubt. And simply because we're thinking about him right now, he may even be thinking of us, right? So this is the nature of Krishna. He loves his devotees. So that's kind of what these verses are mentioning. Let's take a look at text 19. Bahunam janmanamante garavan mam papadite vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudulabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So a very famous verse, right? It's one of your Bhakti Shastri verses. Anyone know this verse? Not yet? Not yet. No? Okay. So, bahunam janmanam ante. So, at the end of many, many births, gyanavan, one who is full in gyan, right? It's like we have this word bhagavan, means, you know, somebody who's full of bhaga. That suffix, avan, means like you're possessing or in full. So, gyanavan mam papadente. So, once you have full gyan, once the gyani, right, he's self-realized, he's knowledgeable of the impersonal Brahman, once he attains to the highest level of that, then he surrenders to Krishna. Once his understanding of Brahman becomes complete, he surrenders to Krishna. Vasudeva sarvam iti. And iti means like this, the shutter quotes, you know, like using quotation marks. It's sort of indicating this is what he thinks. Vasudeva sarvam. That everything is Vasudev. Right? Like the you know, you have this impersonal jnani meditator, he's sitting in a cave, and he's realizing Brahman, you know, he's just merged in the light of Brahman. And then somehow or other, by the mercy of a devotee, he actually becomes a devotee. You know, maybe he goes down to the river and meets a devotee, yogi, and discusses the glories of Vasudev, and advises him to meditate on the super soul, or, you know. So this yogi gradually becomes a personalist. And then by dint of his meditation on the Supreme Lord within his cave, he realizes, oh my God, literally, oh my God. Right? Everything is Vasudev. The whole, and then he emerges from his cave and he sees that the cave is Vasudev. Right? The river is Vasudev. The sky is Vasudev. The Himalayan mountains are Vasudev. Everything is Krishna, and he's able to see that. Right? And Krishna is within my heart. And even I am part and parcel of Krishna. So Vasudeva Sarvam, this is his realization. Sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. That individual, Krishna is saying, is a Mahatma. That's a Mahatma. Yeah? Sudulbaha. And this is very, very rarely attained. It's like the verse that you quoted today, Ribhakta, about Manushanam Sahasreshu Kashchid Gatiti Siddhaye, right? It's very rare to come to the point of understanding and worshipping the Supreme Person of Godhead. Prabhupada says here, the living entity, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals after many, many births, may actually become situated in transcendental pure knowledge that the Supreme Person of Godhead is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there's some leaning towards impersonalism. But when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in spiritual life and that these activities constitute devotional service. So, though for the new bhaktas, especially, right? Then the tendency is to gravitate towards impersonalism or away, even if it's not impersonalism, gravitate away from pure unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Right? This is true for all neophytes, myself included. You know, what to speak of being absorbed in Maya, even in spiritual life, the tendency is to shrug away from the hand that Krishna is offering you, right? Krishna is offering us an opportunity to render pure devotional service to him. He's offering us an opportunity to enter into divine love, divine bliss and love, which is the highest attainment for the soul, but we're really not interested, right? We're really kind of looking away. Oh, there's, yeah, but what about, you know, this thing and that thing and this thing and that thing? So this is the tendency, okay? But when you actually come to, this is the important point, when you actually, dear devotees, please listen. when you actually come to the point of the end of those different paths of knowledge, when you truly, finally, you know, say you leave aside, you reject Krishna's offer of love and affection and union with him in divinity and spiritual bliss, and you move in a different direction. Ah, that's okay, you know, I want to check out this and this and this, and I'm going to go through, I want to follow the path of self-realization. And so then you start that path and you go that way. And eventually, after many lifetimes, when you come to the end of that path, right, when you finally reach perfection in the mystic paths of occultism, you master the mind and senses, right, and you become an exalted yogi. This is after many births. Then you realize, wait a minute, at the end of this tunnel, at the end of this path, is unalloyed love to Krishna. You know, it's that union with Krishna and divine love. This is the highest pinnacle of self-realization and the highest attainment for the soul. It's the end of your travels. It's where you reach perfection. So that's what happens. Okay? Let's take a look here at the next paragraph. It says, this verse is very nicely explained. We're talking about the universal vision, seeing Vasudeva Sarvamiti. It's nicely explained in the third chapter, verse 14 and 15 of the Svetashvatara Upanishad. Sahasrashirsha Purushaha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat Sabhumim Vishvato Vritva Atityashtad Sorry, Tyatishtad Shangulam Purusha Evedagam Sarvam Yadbhutam Yachchabhavyam Utam Rittastas Visheshano Yad Anenati Dohati. In the Chandogya Upanishad 5.1.15, it is said, na vai vacho na chakshumsi na shrotrani na manamsi tyakachakshate prana iti eva chakshate prano hyai vaitani sarvani bhavanti. In the body of a living being, neither the power to speak, nor the power to see, nor the power to hear, nor the power to think is the prime factor. It is the life which is the center of all activities. Similarly, Lord Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is the prime entity in everything. So Krishna is the source of all existence and life. And of course, the Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha, that's the Purusha Sukta, right? Which is, within the Vedic literatures, it is a clear reference to the personality of Godhead. In fact, it's a very beautiful hymn, which is describing the Supreme Lord essentially being sacrificed by the demigods at the time of creation, right? The demigods are drawing the power of creation and the substance of creation from him. Yeah? They're utilizing him. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha. So he's the Supreme Person who has thousands of heads, right? Sahasraksha Sahasrapat. Thousands of eyes and thousands of feet. Okay? And then he covers the entire universe, tatishtad dashangulam, and he expands beyond it by 10 fingers, sort of thing, dashangulam. these are your dashangulam right here. So meaning like he expands the entire universe and then he goes beyond it. It's a way of saying he's transcendental, right? He reaches beyond material existence, even though he's pervading it. He's beyond it. Okay? All right. So let's take a look at text 20. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their natures. So now we hear about different forms of worship. Right? You have the four types that surrender to Krishna, the four types that reject. You have the jnani, who's been described, and how he becomes a pure devotee, and how dear the pure devotee is to Krishna. And now you have those who, they're kind of like, you know, they're pious in a certain way, but they don't surrender to Krishna. They surrender to someone else or something else. Okay? So within the Vedas, it is understood that the demigods are simply manifestations of Krishna's potency, his power. They are jivas just like us. You'll find in different religions, like in ancient Greek or Neoplatonism or in Egypt, oftentimes there's this discussion, you know, like what, are the demigods separate from God, or are they shaktis of God, are they powers of God? And so they are powers of God, but also, according to the Vedic literatures, they are jiva souls, right? They're not, they're just like you and I. except the consciousness of the soul is expanded in different types of bodies in different ways, right? Like if you have the body of, I like to give the example, if your soul is in the body of a butterfly, then your consciousness will perceive the same reality that we're in, but from the perspective of a butterfly. It'll perceive reality through the eyes of a butterfly, the ears of a butterfly, and then it'll look like a Jimi Hendrix album cover, right? The way they perceive reality is psychedelic. Yeah, they see things in ultraviolet light, right? Their reality is totally different than ours, even though we inhabit the same space, because their consciousness is manifest through that particular vessel. And so similarly, you know, human beings also, we have a certain perception of reality. What we're seeing here is not really reality. You're seeing the human take on reality. You're just seeing the human perspective of reality because you're looking through a human body. That's why, you know, there could be demigods and things floating in the sky right above us, but we can't see it because it's beyond the human body. We're limited by it. Now, demigods are not limited, right? I mean, they're limited, but their perspective is much grander than ours. Their perception of reality is incredible, right? In fact, they can perceive things but that we cannot. Like for example, if you were to chant Agni, you know, you call down Agni and ask him to go into a certain flame, he hears your prayers, you know, immediately. In his consciousness, he can perceive, right? And there's many different fire gods, you know. But he, basically, the demigods are aware of those elements or those places, parts of reality that they're in charge of, you know? Like their consciousness expands. Like our consciousness is limited to our body, you know? We don't know what's going on in the next room. It's beyond our senses. But you see, their senses are not like ours. They have extremely powerful senses. They're conscious of things like, you know, the element of fire, wherever it is, you know what I mean? Like that's their body in a sense. In a similar way to us, that their consciousness is aware of it. That's a very high level of body, right? It's because of their body. They have a demigod body. And so that particular, the soul, the consciousness of soul, expands out in that direction. But you see, those bodies are so powerful that they're considered vibhutis of Krishna. They're directly powers of Krishna. They're his shaktis. Okay? They're his opulences within material existence. So that's a very high level of body. You know, maybe you're born as, you know, like you look even in material life, there's different bodies. You know, you may be born in like some village out in the middle of a jungle somewhere, and you know, you don't know how to read or write, and you don't know how to, even basic principles of, you know, a more sophisticated life are beyond you. And yet you may be born in, you know, like Michael Jackson's daughter or something, you know, like you're very wealthy and beautiful and you know, whatever you want in life is handed to you, right? So, I mean, even within the human form of life, there's different degrees of sophistication and consciousness. But a demigod body, it is so grand that it's actually an opulence of God. Like you're inhabiting, as a soul, an opulence of God. So how do you get into that particular type of body? Well, that requires a tremendous amount of piety, right? For that, you have to be, essentially, you have to do Vedic yajñas and things like that. Right? There has to be these powerful forms of ritual worship, which then qualify you by your karma to have such a body. All right? And this is what people fantasize, right? Like, you know, like what is this, like Superman and stuff? You know, like what is the whole thing about Superman? He just like, actually, I went and saw that movie with my, with some family members and stuff like that. And it's just like, the whole thing was just him. It was like, I almost had to close my eyes after a while. It was so like almost nauseating. It's just him like flying through and smashing through buildings and stuff. Like the whole thing is just him like smashing the entire city. And this is what people would do. You know, like it's really appealing to a certain fantasy. Like if I had that power, I hate this damn city so much, I would just smash it, you know? I would just like run my hand and just bash right through the skyscrapers and, you know, completely destroy, you know, like if people had, like we're so low in consciousness in Kali Yuga, when we fantasize about having powers on the level of a demigod, we would destroy everything, you know? We'd be a demon, right? That's what a demon would do if he's unleashed on the earth, right? Of course, you know, the idea is he's defending. He's using his power to defend. But still, there's this, like, everyone wants to see destruction, right? That's how you demonstrate power. So, but what is Superman? Well, he's basically a demigod, you know? He's supposed to be an alien or something like that. Who's, the radioactive power of the sun gives him strength or whatever beyond anything in this world. And yet, you know, he's not limited by anything. So that's really the fantasy. He's in a sense, he's like a vibhuti of Krishna. You know, he's in opulence. And that's what people want. That's what people are attracted to. So if you want to be Superman, you have to perform Vedic sacrifices. Right? We're talking like 100 horse sacrifices or something. And then you get to be on the level of Indra and these high-level gods, right? So imagine Superman, but he's not just conscious of his body or his senses, which are, you know, he can hear someone screaming a mile away or whatever. But it's not just that, but he's conscious of the element of fire, you know, or he's conscious of people praying to him throughout the universe. You know what I mean? So that's like the level of the demigods. And so, yeah.
So all these characters in the movie industry, like Batman, Spider-Man, they put it like to be like demigods?
Well, I mean, they're exhibiting mystic powers and stuff in different degrees. Except Batman, he's just a normal guy, right? But these other ones, you know, they're just sort of, well, yeah, I mean, it's really fulfilling a fantasy for mystic powers. Yeah? Siddhikama. Okay, so here in this particular section, Krishna's going to talk about the demigods and why people worship them in particular. But the main point I'm kind of getting to is that when you're worshiping these demigods, which people do, everyone, you know, is attracted to worshiping demigods because they give immediate benefit and material benefit. It's an exchange. You know, they can be very merciful and they can fulfill your material desires. If you're an intelligent materialist, you'll worship the demigods. But ultimately, it is foolish because not only are the results that they give limited and temporary, but the very power to give them comes from the Supreme Lord. In addition to that, you're just worshipping different opulences or vibhutis of the Supreme Lord. So in that way, you're worshipping God, but you're worshipping Him indirectly. You're worshipping His shaktis rather than the shaktiman. Right? You're worshipping the power rather than the source of power. And so this is considered foolish. I also want to make a statement that you'll see in Western religions, like particularly in Judaism or in, you know, in Christianity and Islam, the idea of worshipping demigods is severely condemned. You see in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not have, you know, no other god, I'm a jealous god, right? Don't worship deities, which is kind of like a condemnation of demigod worship. This idea that, you know, God will destroy you if you worship demigods. So the understanding of God in the Vedas is much different. He's a little bit more broad-minded, right? He basically says, yeah, you can worship gods if you want, but you're not very intelligent, you know? It's condemned in the sense that it's foolish or it's not intelligent due to the spiritual perspective of the temporality of matter, right? And the ultimate goal of the soul, which is to have a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So it's condemned as foolish, but it's not restricted. You could do it if you want. There's a little liberality there. So I just want to point that out as well. You'll see within the Vaishnav tradition, Vaishnavs don't worship demigods, and also demigod worshippers are generally avoided as materialists. But it's not like, you know, you go around trying to kill them or something, right? Okay, so let's take a look in text 20 here. Again, Prabhupada says here, those who are freed from all material contamination surrender to the Supreme Lord and engage in devotional service. As long as the material contamination is not completely washed off, they are by nature non-devotees. But even those who have material desires and who resort to the Supreme Lord are not so much attracted by external nature because of approaching the right goal. They soon become free from all material lust. So what Krishna recommends is to worship Him, even for material things. Even if you're after material desires, go to Krishna instead. Ask Him. He may not give you what you want, right? Because he cares for you and He's thinking of your best interest. So because there's this personal connection with you, He doesn't give you what you want all the time. Or even if He does give it to you, He doesn't give it to you in a way that that you want it to. You know, give it to you in a way that it'll lead to your spiritual advancement, right? So therefore, many people will avoid the Supreme Lord. Even sometimes you may come to Krishna and pray to Him for something, He may actually ignore you and then take away everything you have. Right? This is why people are hesitant to approach the Supreme Lord. Oftentimes you'll see there's like, you know, the wife comes in to see the deities and the man is sitting in the car. You know, he doesn't want to come. I don't want to pray to Krishna because He'll take everything away and force me to become a devotee. right? Whereas you can approach demigods and they won't do that because basically they don't care. You know, for them it's like a business arrangement. Okay, you worship me nicely. It's my job, you know. I have to reciprocate. Yeah, I'm a god. What do I got to, you know? So that's what I do, right? Okay, you know, it's very nice. Thank you for all the prayers. I appreciate it very much. I mean, they're nice people, right? They're grateful and stuff, and they're happy, and therefore they bless you with stuff. But if you don't worship them, you know, then they really don't care. You know, it's up to you. You do whatever you want. But Krishna's not that way. He'll actually do whatever is good for you. You approach him and pray. It's like you approach him and pray to a demigod, and they look at you and they say, oh, very good, you know, here, you're pious, take this. You approach Krishna and pray to him, and Krishna says, oh, it's very good that you're praying to me, right? I don't really care about all the stuff you want and your material desires. That's not important. You're praying to me. Ah, hello there. Yes, yes, very good. Now, what can I do to make you pray to me for more? You know, what can I do to make you pray more? Because that's actually what's best for you. You see? So that's Krishna's interest. He wants you to approach him. So, you know, he may fulfill your desire, he may not, or he may fulfill it in a way that you make spiritual advancement. Prabhupada continues here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is recommended that whether one is a pure devotee or is free from all material desires or is full of material desires or desires liberation from material contamination, he should in all cases surrender to Vasudeva and worship him. As stated in the Bhagavatam 2.3.10, Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udadadhi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta buddhasham padam. Less intelligent people who have lost their spiritual sense take shelter of demigods for immediate fulfillment of material desires. So Krishna is saying, you know, whatever your position, whether you have desires, don't have desires, you want liberation, yeah, you should practice bhakti yoga and worship the Supreme Lord. That's the proper thing to do for everybody. Okay? Even a materialist should worship the Supreme Lord. You know, that's why we have to be a little careful. Sometimes we can become, have like a negative attitude towards religious materialists, you know, pious people who... They have some sense of religion, but they're motivated by a desire to enjoy the material world. But actually, they're situated properly. They shouldn't stay there. They should move on to a higher level. But that's actually how a materialist should be, according to Krishna. Right? Now, Prabhupada mentions here, they've lost their... they come for immediate fulfillment. So that's what Krishna is saying here. Haritta gyan, their knowledge. Remember, we're talking about the jnani, right? We're talking about, you know, what is true knowledge? Well, it culminates in pure devotional service after traversing the path of yoga. But what is the position of a demigod worshipper? Kamais taister hrittagyana, their knowledge is stolen by illusion. I'm sorry, it's stolen by lust, it's stolen by desire. You become so desirous of something that you're like, you know, okay, you know, I understand the Supreme Lord should be approached, but I really want this thing, and Krishna's not going to give it to me. Yeah? You become very desirous. You know, I really want, you know, a beautiful wife, or I want money, I want power, position, control, fame, wealth. Give it to me! Give it all! And Krishna's not paying much attention to that, right? Krishna's like, yeah, that's okay, have some Mahaprasad instead. Have a Gulabjamun instead. And then, you know, so then you go, okay, well, you know, who can I worship? What can I do to actually fulfill these desires? Let me go to a demigod, right? Prabhadyante anya devataha. So they approach other gods. Tam tam nimamasthaya. So they're going to follow all the niyamas, the rules and regulations, right? Prakrita niyatasvaya, that arise by their own nature, by their own prakriti, their own conditioning. So you'll see throughout the world, people worship different gods, and even they worship the Supreme Lord. But their worship is oftentimes conducted by their own conditioning. They'll perceive of the gods a certain way. For example, I mentioned Egypt. So, you know, in Egypt they have a certain vision of the gods. You know, who are they? What do they look like? What's their personalities? In ancient Greece it's very different. You know, even many of the ancient Greek philosophers were critical of demigod worship because they felt that the demigods were portrayed as lusty and, you know, they're always quarreling with each other, and you know, one is raping another, another one's getting vengeance, and they're always constantly coming down and kidnapping earth women, you know, and having babies. Right? So, you know, but there's a certain way that people will visualize the gods according to their own conditioning, according to their own nature. And it's the same in you know, general religion too. People have a tendency, like I remember I went to this Catholic church that's down the street here that my family helped build, you know, like 100 years ago or whatever. And I went inside and now it's a Korean church. It was actually, it's like a cathedral, you know, it's all made of stone and everything. And then you go inside, but now it's a Korean church and everything is in Korean. And all, even I saw the pictures of Mary there. It's like she looks Korean, right? Like it's even drawn kind of like in the style of Light of the Bhagavan, that sort of Japanese sort of style. What we consider Japanese, I guess. But, you know, she's wearing like a certain like Asian clothes and stuff. And, you know, she looks like a Korean woman from like an old Korean painting. Yeah. Even has like face makeup, like a Korean, you know, like the white paint and everything. So that's Mother Mary, you know. Undoubtedly, you know, she reciprocates through that. I don't doubt it. You know, she doesn't have to look like, you know, the traditional painting. But people will worship according to their own nature. Does that make sense? Okay, so it's the same thing with the demigods. Therefore, you find throughout the world all different forms of demigod worship. And it's really according to those people's own nature that they visualize and develop niyata. They develop rules and regulations, different forms of worship. And the demigods, you know, obviously may reciprocate with that. Okay? Any questions about that? All right, let's take a look at text 21. Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shadhayat chittamichchiti tasya tasya chalam shradham tam eva vididham yaham. I am in everyone's heart as the supersoul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Prabhupada says here, in the second paragraph, both the living entity and the demigods are subordinate to the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the living entity cannot worship the demigod by his own desire, nor can the demigod bestow any benediction upon the Supreme without the Supreme will, as it is said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so the point is, in this exchange, which appears to be independent of Krishna, it's actually totally dependent on Krishna. Both the demigod is getting his power by Krishna, and the worshipper is getting not only his desire, you know, is in a sense his desire, what he's asking for, the power to ask it, and when it eventually comes to him. All these things are ultimately coming from the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Right? Everything is Krishna. So, you know, even when you're worshipping a demigod, ultimately it's Krishna who's giving it to you. So there's no reason to worship the demigod separately. The example, of course, is the like the post office. Like you want to go pick up a letter. Of course, I don't know if people go to the post office anymore, do they? Right now, everything's Amazon and UPS. And but anyway, when those days when people went to the post office, then you know you go in and you ask for your package, but you don't try to like somehow you know pay the postman separately, right? Like the postman gives you your package and says, okay, you know that's going to cost. Or, you know, say you're mailing a package. Oh, that's going to cost you, you know, $15. And you say, $15. This is for you. And you wink at him, right? No, don't put it in the register. This is, what's your name there? John. Hello, John. This is for you, right? So, you know, put it in your wallet. Don't put it in the register. No, it has nothing to do. He's just a representative of the U.S. Postal Service. He's not involved at all. Or the bank teller, you do the same thing. Or the police officer, you know, like cop comes to give you a ticket, you roll down the window and, you know, and you've got, like, while you give him your driver's license, you put, like, a $50 bill, you know, underneath it, you know. Right? So you might get in trouble, right? You might not appreciate it, or maybe you will, right? So it depends how close it is to Christmas, right? So anyway, you hand him the $50 bill, and then you have like you know a Christmas song playing on the radio, and you turn it up as you hand it to him, you know. So anyway, that's considered illegal, right? It's avidipurvakam. It's not according to the rules. So similarly, worshiping demigods is the same way. They're just Krishna servants. You know, what are you doing, right? So, but you're so greedy, you're so filled with lust, that's why you're doing that. But then again, you know, Krishna allows it. You have the freedom to do that. You have the freedom to be an idiot within Vedic culture, right? It's not that Krishna's like demanding and forcing people to follow all the rules. There is the law of karma, and you will be punished, you know, for your own actions. But you have the freedom to act within the material world as you like. Okay? But Krishna also gives you, educates you, and explains to you what is proper action. So everything is given by Krishna. Tanum bhakta shraddhayarchitam ichchati. So they're worshipping that demigod with full faith. Yeah, it requires a lot of faith to worship the gods, to do any kind of worship, because it's hard work. If you want to please a demigod, it's not an easy thing. Yeah, and you have to actually devote yourself, you know, even in magic. If you want to, you want to get some results, and you know, you're basically, what is magic for the most part is just pre-Christian traditions of religion. So if you want to worship a demigod and get some result, it's hard work. You have to get a whole ritual together. You know, oftentimes it's like it'll take a month, you know, of preparation. You have to plan it out. You have to really meditate on it and think about it. You have to pray to that particular deity. And then, you know, you have to perform some ritual for his pleasure. Many of the Vedic rituals, they're basically just throwing a party for the god. It's not like some real complicated thing. It's not even really necessarily... There is a mechanical element, you know, of chanting the right shlokas and everything, chanting them properly and doing the ritual. And that's so as not to offend your guest, right? But you really, there's a lot of attention and professionality has to be. Just like if you're throwing a party for Obama or Donald Trump or whatever, you know, some very high-powered individual, it's got to be nice, right? Like when you go there, it's like, you know, everyone's in a tuxedo and they have... you know, professional servers and the music is there. There's like a professional bartender, that, you know, a 10-piece orchestra, right? And everything has to be nice, you know? Otherwise, it's like nobody wants to attend. It's like an offense. They come to the door and leave. So you have to make sure that the yajna is proper and all the mantras are being chanted nicely. The rituals are being followed. It's not just some mechanical thing. It's a personal thing. And then when the demigods come, the whole thing is you're welcoming them. Come on, hey, come here, have a seat, you know, and here's Ajam and Achaman and all these different things, you know, we're honoring you as our guest. And then we even have entertainment. There may be plays and dancers and things like that. Basically, you're throwing them a party. And at the end of the party, you say, and by the way, you know, there's a small, small request that I have, you know, please give me many children or whatever it is, make me the king or protect my kingdom. It's not hard for you. You're so glorious, right? And that's basically what it is. And that's what people do even in material life. Like if you, like I just saw in the news, there was this, there's this senator in Florida who's on trial now because there's this wealthy doctor in Florida who would lavish him with parties and stuff, right? He would bring this senator, he would fly him out to the Virgin Islands in a private jet and give him all sorts of, you know, like a party, women and wine and whatever. I don't know what he's giving him, but basically lavishing him with gifts and lavishing him with a party. And then after all these, this money was spent, millions of dollars perhaps on him, or at least a few a few hundred thousand dollars, then he makes a request. Oh, my dear sir, you know, I have the Medicare... you know, the government institution of Medicare is trying to sue me and attack me because I'm trying to cheat them, you know? Like there's some kind of billing conflict, you know, and I'm trying to cheat the government. So why don't you ask, you know, the Obama administration to step in and do me a favor and just tell Medicare or whoever to just back off, right? And then, but it didn't work out. I mean, this is politics all the time they do this. This time they got caught. So now it's a big thing and everyone's on trial. But that's basically what demigod worship is. You invite them in and you lavish them with a party, you know, offer them a whole bunch of offerings and stuff, and then make your request. Yeah.
But when we do these yajnas here, the demigods come to participate in Krishna's sacrifice?
Well, I don't know if the demigods do, but Agni does, you know, if he feels like it. Right, you're definitely, at least in the Vaishnava samskars, you're invoking different agnis, satya agni, right? There's mangala, I think, is another one. There's different forms of agni that you invoke, and so he may come, you know, but as a service to Krishna, and he's facilitating your exchange with Krishna. But basically, the main thing is you're worshiping Krishna. It's just that you may invoke certain demigods to help you, like in. And that's one example of that.
So they come in the form of elements, right?
Yeah. Well, you have just the fire, and then you have different types of fire, and Agni will manifest himself if you call him, right? and for a particular purpose. Okay. All right. So, any questions about this? Hare Krishna. All right.
Actually, I have one question.
Yeah.
So, how does the demigod receive pleasure from like the sacrifice?
I don't know. I don't know how it works, but it works somehow or other. You know, when you offer things in sacrifice, they experience it. And I'm not exactly sure how they experience it, like what it feels like for them, you know, or whether it postpones their postpones their stay in heavenly planets. I know that for the Pitris, right, like the forefathers, when you offer them the sacrifice, then it directly correlates to enjoyment in their world. It becomes wealth for them. Right, so like you do a yearly sacrifice to your departed ancestors, and they're in Pitri Loka, Lupto Pindo Takakriya. Right, then when you feed that Brahmin, you find a qualified Brahmin and you feed him. That gives them enough food for a year. Like their tab is paid. You know, it's almost like imagine they have a tab there, and you know that you just filled up their bank account just from like the Brahmin eating a rice ball. And when it mentions in some of the shastras, like when the Brahmin bathes afterwards, which he's supposed to do, then the water that falls off is shika, then it rains in Pitri Loka, you know? So it's like one small, in these different realms, one small little action of sacrifice, it transforms into wealth, but in a very high way. It's like if you get a lot of wealth, you know, like if your parents somehow transfer money into your bank account and you get... You know, whenever you want money, you're like a rich kid, and whenever you get like 50 grand a month, and whenever you run through it, they just fill it up again. Or they give you a credit card and just, you know, they'll just keep paying it off, right? So it's the same thing, you know, like you're just filling up their account. I don't know if it's the same in the demigod realms, you know, like how the demigods experience it. I would suspect, without confirmation, that it's something similar. They somehow derive enjoyment from it, or material facility. Okay. Prabhupada says the particular mode, this is jumping ahead a little bit, the particular mode of the demigod, devotional attitude of the living entity toward a particular type of demigod is also arranged by the Supreme Lord. So even your so-called devotion to the demigod comes from Krishna. The demigods cannot infuse the living entities with such an affinity, but because he is the Supreme Lord of the Supersoul, he is present in the hearts of all living entities. Krishna gives impetus to man to worship certain demigods. The demigods are actually different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they have no independence. So again, they're vibhutis, or they're parts of the universal form. All right. So anyway, jumping a couple sentences ahead, it says, he arranges through the demigods to fulfill the desire of the living entity, but both the demigod and the living entity are dependent on the supreme will. They are not independent. Okay, so let's take a look at text 22. Satya shadaya yuktastasya dadanabihite labucheta tata kama kaman mayiva bhitan hitan. Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires, but in actuality these benefits are bestowed by me alone. So Krishna's claiming it, right? This whole thing, you think you're worshiping demigods, but it's actually me. I'm the one behind it all, so just worship me. So satya shraddha, with that shraddha that Krishna is giving him, tasyada adanamihite, then he worships the desire, or the living entity, the demigod for the desired result, labhate chattata kaman, and he attains that kama, the fruit of his desire, but it's actually given by Krishna alone. The demigods cannot award benedictions to their devotees without the permission of the Supreme Lord. The living entity may forget that everything is the property of the Supreme Lord, but the demigods do not forget. You see, so the demigods are fully aware of the true position. They understand. And we see, you know, whenever there's trouble, then what do? They go to Lord Brahma, yeah? And then Brahma, he goes to Shvetadvip, or the realm of Lord Vishnu in the material world, and he prays. So that's, you know, they don't approach Krishna directly. Like they're not just going to Shvetadvip. They go through, you know, their authority, Lord Brahma, and they're fully aware, you know, of the Vedic literatures. They understand the position of reality. Right? Although not necessarily, it's not necessarily that they understand the Supreme Lord, because you can't understand him directly. They have no more ability to understand God than you do, because he's hidden. Right? It's only through devotion that you can understand God. Like, for example, in the Western conception, you have angels. Ooh, they're not really jivas. They're not human beings. They're kind of like direct manifestations of, or expansions of God in a certain way. But they know God in a certain way that he is beyond, you know, human ability, right? So in the Vedic position, it's a different perspective that the demigods are actually jivas. They have no capacity to understand God more or less than you. It's only through devotional service that they can understand God. It's only through the yogic process that they can become enlightened. Although their consciousness is vastly expanded throughout material creation, and due to their piety, they inhabit a particular vibhuti or opulence of God. Okay? So let's continue here. The class is almost over, but we have enough for a couple more verses dealing with the demigods. Text 23, we'll just do one more. Antivattu palam teshan tad bhavatyalpamedasam devan devayajo yanti madbhakti yantimamapi. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. But my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Okay, so this is the final point that Krishna is making here about the demigods. You know, not only does he provide all the things they give, not only are they just his energies, not only that, but he gives the faith by which the worshipper worships the demigod. Everything is dependent on Krishna. But in addition, the things that you're lusting after, that kama that's driving you to do it, that's also wrong. It's bad. It's not helpful to you. Antivattu palam tesham. The fruits that the demigods give are temporary. They're subjected to an end. Antivat. So whatever you get in this material world, you're just worshipping for you're wasting your capacity to worship for temporary things that'll slip through your fingers ultimately, like castles made of sand. Right? You're worshipping the demigod. Say, you know, please give me a sand castle. Give me a big, beautiful sand castle right on the edge of the water. You know, where I have a good view of the ocean, right? And you don't know, but when the tide comes in another 4 or 5 hours, everything's going to get washed away. So life is like that, and death is like that. Death will come in like the tide and wash everything away. There's nothing that you have that will not be washed away. Right? Even this very body. There's nothing that you can keep. Your jewelry, whatever it may be. It's all gone, right? And so everything in this world is like that. Even the world itself and even the demigods themselves also get washed away eventually. So Krishna is telling us, you know, don't focus on the temporary. Tad bhavityalpamedasa, it's dumb, right? Alpamedasa means you have small brains. You know, you have a very small brain, which just as it is today, that's a way of saying that it's very unintelligent. Devan devayajo yanti. And then if you worship the demigods, you go to the demigods at death. Madbhakta manti mamapi. And those who worship Krishna go to Krishna. Okay? All right. Let's look at the last paragraph. Prabhupada says here, the results achieved by the demigods' benedictions are perishable because within this material world, the planets, the demigods, and their worshippers are all perishable. Therefore, it is clearly stated in this verse that all the results achieved by worshipping the demigods are perishable, and that therefore such worship is performed by the less intelligent living entity. Because the pure devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service of the Supreme Lord achieves eternal, blissful existence, that is, full of knowledge, his achievements and those of the common worshipper of the demigods are different. So this is an important point. Don't conflate worshipping demigods with bhakti. It's not the same thing. For example, there's a temple, this Malabu temple. It's a beautiful temple. It's a Vishnu temple. And there's Balaji there. I'm sure you've all been there, right? So it's a beautiful deity. But then on a lower level, literally down the hill, there's another temple. They keep it separate for worshipping demigods. Now, we won't necessarily do that. You know, we don't have a demigod worshipping temple or something. But, you know, they're appealing to sort of the broader Hindu community. So they have, you know, you go in there and you see, you know, Shiva and Durga and Ganesh, and then you also see the planets, like when you first walk in on the right. They have like, you know, they have little deities of each planet, and for people want to propitiate, to alleviate their karma. But, all of these different things that they may give are temporary. And not only that, but essentially, you shouldn't think that the worship that goes on there and the worship that goes on to Vishnu are the same thing. They're not, right? They're totally different. It's not bhakti, in other words. Sometimes people think, you know, I'm a Ganesh Bhakta or something. That's not bhakti. Bhakti is for Krishna. Pure devotional, unalloyed service is for Krishna. Worship of the demigods is not the same as worship of Krishna. And especially Mayavadis or impersonalists will conflate the two. That yato mattatopat, you know, whoever you worship, it's all the same. You worship Ganesh, Shiva, Brahma, whatever, it doesn't matter. You all go to the same place, yeah.
So that's why it's designed that upstairs is for your Balaji and downstairs is for the demigods?
Yeah, there's the two separate things. You'll see also if you go to different, you know, fellowships and different impersonal communities, even here in L.A., you go inside their temple and you see, you know, on their altar, they have, everyone's on the same level, right? There's Krishna, there's Jesus, there's Muhammad, you know, there's Buddha, and then you also have Ganesh and Indra, and, you know, whoever, just throw them all right there. They're all the same, right? It doesn't really matter, there's no distinction. It's all the same thing, it's just Brahman, but in different imagined forms, basically. And so, you know, you just worship whatever illusion you want. They're all illusions, so it just doesn't matter. Just worship any illusion that is natural for you. And eventually, by that particular kind of illusion, it's a little uplifting. So for you, that's all right. You know, you're making your way towards the impersonal Brahman. That's their idea. But that's not the truth. The truth is that you go to different destinations. They're not all on the same level, right? And worship is ultimately meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so Krishna will continue to talk about, well, you know, we'll continue this topic on Tuesday when Krishna starts to talk about the Mayavadis and impersonalists. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada.